welcome back to the podcast about what is going wrong in my life this week.
Oh, it's my favorite podcast.
It's
I subscribed.
It's Branched, otherwise known as My Apartment is Infested with Brown Recluses, and I live on the third floor. Somebody please explain that to me.
Well, the thing is that the first and second floors are not great floors for brown recluses. They really enjoy prime numbers.
Prime numbers?
That aren't one.
They're a prime spider.
Oof.
And they're all in my house. But this is Branched, the podcast. Well, hello and welcome. I'm Maddie.
So, wait, no, we can't just like glide past it. What's going on?
I want to just repress it.
What's going on at your home with your spider?
Okay, well, here's the deal. Honestly, it's actually making me really weird because this is what I did. So I started to trap them in jars because I needed to prove for myself, not because I had to, but I needed to prove for myself to the office people, the management, that they are in fact brown recluses and they needed to do something about it. Nothing has been done. It's been months. Nothing has been done. We're moving out. So I was trapping them to either, like, claim unsafe living conditions or to just rub it in their faces that I was right.
Mm-hmm.
But then I
or
just...
both.
But, yeah, but then I just never did anything with it. So I've started to get really weird. I'm having dreams about them. And I've decided that I want to keep them in jars and use them later for witchcraft. I'm, like, partially convinced there's a way for me to siphon their poison or venom, and I can use it to my benefit.
Hey, Maddie. How much sleep you been getting?
I told you I didn't want to bring it up. This is why I was trying to gloss over it. It's making me really weird. I had a dream that I killed one because it was on my brother, but in its abdomen was a hidden dagger with its own poison, its own venom on it like a poison, and that's how it got me in the end.
Oh, sneaky.
So it died like middle fingers up, like two, like its second.
That's how I want to go.
Second to front legs just up like middle fingers, like, oh, fuck you, I'm not going out without a fight.
So when I was 10... we moved into a new home.
Yeah.
And I remember very clearly, I had been, like, first thing I got set up right in my room was my little, like, 12-inch TV
mm-hmm.
and my PS1.
Yeah.
And
was it a themed TV? Do you remember when they were, like, SpongeBob TVs?
I do, but I didn't have one of those.
Okay.
And so, like, literally nothing else in my room set up, so I'm sitting on the floor playing PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
And out of my closet, my open closet door, runs this brown recluse, and before I can react, it crawls up my leg, up my arm, and up my shoulder, and is just there.
Yeah.
And I am frozen in fear because, spoiler, I am terrified of spiders. Much more so when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
And then it eventually, like, crawled off me and ran away.
So, for Halloween...
it literally just came out to be like,
it came out to alpha the shit out of you.
It did. I moved out of that bedroom.
Did you really?
No, I didn't.
Well, I moved out of this apartment because, like, I have collected 5. One of them is still alive. I've killed at least 7 more. So that's
far too many.
That's 12. That's an infestation. There's no way that we can get around it. And the other issue is that I've looked into it a little bit, and I think they have to be, like, dug out. Like, I think they're in the walls, and they have to be dug out. So there's no way.
Like, my skin is crawling. Ugh.
And they're not as reclusive as everybody thinks. Like,
they're not reclusive at all.
No, winter months are fine. And you just told a story where it literally came out and crawled up your body.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're ready to go.
Terrified because, like, you know, they're like, oh, they hide in your dressers and stuff like that. And I was like, but what do I do with my clothes? I don't want it. I don't want that.
How do I have safety? My cat would literally pin them, like, in the carpet. Like, zero fear. Just pin them in the carpet.
That's Zuko.
Yep.
Zuko would do that with people if he could.
He totally would. So, now I live on the 16th floor of a different building, and I haven't seen any bugs.
Oh, wait. You've already moved?
I've already moved.
Oh, good.
But I still have to clean out the old apartment, but we can only do it in, like, daylight hours when they're less active. Because we're cleaning.
Jesus,
you're putting your fingers
Christ.
In the corners where they shouldn't be. I was going to move something today. It wasn't even 4 o'clock, and there was one in the corner coming out.
I couldn't do it. I'm going to be honest with you. I can't. I can't.
I've debated, like, telling people who have been in this apartment that this has been the case because, like, for fear that they would freak out and be like, we could have been bitten? And, like, the answer is yes, you could have.
Even if it's just a little garden spider, like, no. But even more so, it's a, you know, a spicy one. Yeah. I cannot do that.
Well, I've looked it up, and apparently a brown recluse spider bite, I mean, it's going to be a pain in the ass. It's definitely not good. You're going to have to do something about it, but it's not, like, the end all. I think it's less bad than
a black widow. It hurts like shit, though, I heard. Yeah, black widow, it's like you are living on borrowed time. You got to get to the hospital right now.
Yeah.
But brown recluses, I think they just, like, it's necrotizing, like, and it just kind of works its way out.
Yeah, so you can, I mean, you'll end up with, like, a huge welt, and, like, a chunk of your leg is gonna be fucked up, but...
I love it.
I don't know. We're trying really hard to, like, not. So, like, the one that was in the corner, I was, like, moving, it's, like, canvases and cardboard that I use for arts and crafts. Mm-hmm. Hashtag artist.
Hashtag artist. hashtag creator.
Hashtag influencer. That's us.
I'm an influencer, so I really think you should give me my pizza for free, sir.
Speaking of, not enough people have told me I'm pretty today, so...
Hey, Maddie.
Thanks.
You're really pretty.
Thank you.
You didn't even wait till you said to say thanks.
I was like, the second you started, I was like, yes, this is what I wanted. So, like, I just, like, didn't move the little canvases yet. I've just, like, sprayed it down, or actually I have, like, a powder... that kills bugs, and hopefully that'll take care of it, and then I'll move it. Because I'm like, I'm going to pick it up, it's either going to fall out and land on me, and I'm wearing shorts, or I'm going to have to, like, deal with it maybe crawling up, or, like, I can't judge its movements.
How much are hazmat suits? I feel like that's the only way. That's the only way I'm okay. And even then, not really.
I mean, either way, welcome to Branched 2020.
Yeah, we're done with this conversation. I hate it. I hate it so much. I'm like itching.
Literally
right now.
Itching, yes. Trying to not think about the brown recluses. And it, well, I suppose it's a good enough segue because we can talk about Eight-Legged Freaks, which is a movie.
And arachnophobia. Which is what we told my roommate Chris that we'd open with.
Right. So today's episode.
Which we kind of did.
Is not about spiders or movies about spiders.
Like, I would not participate in that episode. I'm just going to be honest.
I want to know if somebody can comment and tell me with these openings. Like, do you ever have any idea about what we're going to talk about?
Okay, well, sometimes you cut us off before we can get too distracted, like 30 seconds in.
Yeah.
And keep us on track. Then other times...
We're here,
and it's almost 8 minutes in.
Made me go back into it. And I know. I told you guys about my weird witchcraft idea.
Well, listen.
If I have a bunch of lavender and, like, toads, and if I put it all in a pot, a cauldron, if you will,
mm-hmm.
over a fire,
mm-hmm.
and I just sprinkle the spiders in there,
mm-hmm.
something
mm-hmm.
will happen, right?
Yeah, I think that's it. You got it.
That's it? Okay.
And nobody can prove us wrong. Stay out of our comments, Wickus.
Stay out of our comments. Welcome to Branch. Today we're talking about movies.
Yeah, movies. I love them. That's it.
Great, that's it.
That's all I got. Done.
Solid. Way to go, Doug.
Cut the trap.
So more importantly, I want to make a nature versus nurture argument.
Okay.
I just want to spend the rest of the podcast arguing.
So we're not talking about movies anymore. Now we're just talking about nature versus nurture.
No, but okay. Like within movies.
So are you born liking movies a certain way?
Yes. Are you born liking movies a certain way? Are you predisposed to a certain kind of narrative? Or do you only like the ones that you have been exposed to at a young age or that resonate, like, in a very realistic way with your life experiences?
Okay. So, how do you want to start that?
So, okay. Here's what I want to say. I do kind of think that we're predisposed to liking a certain kind of narrative, right? People are story-built beings. We've told stories for thousands and thousands of years in order to pass on information, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there are certain ways to go about telling a story that are going to always feel familiar and feel good.
Yeah. So do you mean, like, human beings are all predisposed to liking the same types of stories? Or
I don't think all human beings are predisposed to liking the same types of stories, but I think all human beings are predisposed to liking stories, and depending upon what lineage you come from, it's a different kind of story. Because, like, the way that ancient Greek mythos operate, and the way that, like, I don't know, ancient Egyptian narratives.
You don't think that was culture so very much nurture?
So very much nurture?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, but I think that nurture has turned into nature.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm buying into that one. I think that from a very, very young age, we are influenced by the type of stories that we hear.
Okay.
So I think that, like, it's almost indistinguishable.
Okay.
So I think, like, from a very, you know, like, toddler age, you know, we are hearing the stories of our culture and the way our culture tells stories. And so then we are going to grow up and like the way that that is.
Yeah.
And we can grow and like things from different cultures or things for different ways. Like, I think a good example, I love scary movies.
Okay.
I love horror movies just in general.
Can't stand.
But I was a scared child. Like,
yeah.
I was scared of everything.
Like spiders?
Like, I used to, which is so funny because I'm the complete opposite now, but I used to have like the radio on for me to fall asleep. And I remember like in like October, they would have like, you know, the radio ads that'd be like spooky, but you know, not.
Yeah.
And those used to scare the shit out of me when I was a kid. So there's no way I could watch horror movies.
Yeah.
But now that's like my favorite genre, I think.
Okay. Well, here's a nurture thing that does... It does prove your point, but I still think that there is some nature involved. Because when I was young, my dad let me watch Van Helsing, and I have never been able to watch scary movies ever since then.
How young were you?
I was less than 5.
God, I hate you. Oh, I think I was, like, I must have been in middle school when that came out.
When that came out.
Yeah.
See, and it's not like it's a good or, like, or different movie. I actually like the movie now enough, but, like, apparently I just didn't sleep for 2 weeks after that when I was a little kid.
Well, I think that's got to be terrifying for a child.
Yeah, there's just blood everywhere, and the demon vampire people were very demonic looking to me. And I was like, everything that I knew about the shadows is real, and it's right in front of my face, and I'm scared.
Oh my God, I remember I must have been, like, 8... And it was right after The Sixth Sense came to video, like VHS. And my parents thought that was a good movie night, I guess. So we watched it. And my sister, who's a few years older than me, she was quote unquote fine. I know she was scared.
Yeah.
I know, Becky, I got your number. But I walked into my room after to like go to bed, and it just, like, you know when you, like, you watch a scary movie or you're scared, like, everything just seems to have so much potential around you?
Right.
Like, it's not just, like, an empty room, and that's not just, like, a closet anymore. That is, like, where something's gonna come out of once I turn my light off.
Right, and it's like, how did I not see this before?
So I went and slept in my parents' room that night. It was their fault.
Yep.
So they had to suffer those consequences.
That's true. I mean, they do. Like, I had to sleep with my parents for a while after my dad let me watch Van Helsing. But also, I can't explain this piece of, like, why I like certain movies. So, like, you know Princess Mononoke?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Princess Mononoke and stories like that, we can absolutely throw Avatar The Last Airbender, like, into this category.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually pretty young when all of these things came out. But when they came out, it was like, holy shit, whoever made this is speaking the language of me right now. Like this is it, because I'm really, really drawn to, and was for a really long time, especially when I was a kid, things about nature. I just loved it 100%, always. I'm into it. Give me more of it. So Princess Mononoke happened, and I was like, this is everything. This is my Bible now.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that there are things that we just like. I mean, whether that is something like we're born liking that thing, or it's something that happens over time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. And those things change over time, too. But I think, yeah, the stories that, like, are very much about nature and, like, also redemption and all this stuff. Like, I really like that. Okay, let's do this. What are your favorite movies?
Okay, so my top 5, and they fluctuate, like, which is on top. But this is approximately what my top 5 are. It would be The Dressmaker with Kate Winslet, which came out in 2015. Hunt for the Wilder People, which I believe came out in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Princess Mononoke, which originally came out in 1999, I believe, but didn't come to the United States until a few years later. And then the other ones I don't have dates for, but Fantastic Mr. Fox, which was the Wes Anderson movie. And then fifth is sort of like Harry Potter, Star Wars, that whole deal all in one.
Okay. I don't know if I can pick favorites.
But you asked the question.
I know. But then I started thinking like, oh no, what are my favorites? Okay. I think Scream as a franchise.
Okay. That counts.
Because it is not even so much a slasher franchise or a horror franchise as much as it's like a meta pop culture extravaganza.
Even though I haven't really seen them and I like don't really like scary movies, I know what you're talking about. Scream is way deeper than anybody gives credit for.
And it's very meta. Like it's honestly so meta and so much a commentary that it isn't scary, but I don't think that was done by accident. Like, I think that's the point, you know? The point isn't to the jump scares and whatnot. Yeah. It's basically a love story about movies. And I really like Alien.
Okay.
That's
two.
Spirited Away, yeah. I think, is a great one. Mm-hmm. You know, just classic Studio Ghibli.
And that one I can debate on, because I watched Spirited Away, because everybody was like, this is it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, it ain't for me. But then I watched Princess Mononoke. I was like, that's the one. That's it.
Yeah, I loved Spirited Away.
Mm-hmm.
Though that kid could not stop shouting. Jesus Christ. But that's what kids do. They just shout and they run.
Like, that's exactly what they do.
Until they like are tired and then they sleep.
Our next door neighbors are super cute, and sometimes they whisper scream, like out in the hallway. Adorable. Okay, so you're at three.
I'm at three?
Yeah. God, do you want to do two more? You can do one more.
Okay, well, the whole Lord of the Rings trilogy.
All of the Lord of the Rings is four.
Like, never has, I don't know, like, what a production, like, for mostly practical effects, which I am a big fan of, which is why Alien's on that list, by the way, because Alien is a, you know, a space sci-fi horror movie all done with practical effects. Like, that's wild.
That's
to
a
me.
Winner for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Alien is pretty incredible.
And they, you know, there's practical effects in the 70s too.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Lord of the Rings is just, it's a feat, and to have it done so well and so cohesively,
mm-hmm.
Because it, like, making a Lord of the Rings movie is a dangerous proposition, because those fans will cut you.
They will.
I'm
actually surprised there hasn't been more tragedies.
Yeah. I rewatched the Hobbit trilogy though, and I'll tell you, I really liked it in theaters, but upon second viewing, it was not as good, partly because it was so much CGI.
Well, I've heard people are, this is the one where I'm surprised there hasn't been more violence, because people are ready to fight over The Hobbit. I couldn't get through the second one.
Yeah, I mean, I watched all three, and I still find them okay. Like, I just rewatched them not too long ago. But I do think that, you know, Peter Jackson has already proved that he can make a masterful Lord of the Rings movies
mm-hmm.
with practical effects.
Yeah.
Why would you step away from that to do something that's going to, you know, CGI for how good it is, CGI pulls you out of the narrative.
It does. And, it pulls you out.
You know, that's no amount of good CGI isn't going to look like CGI.
Right.
Know?
And that's the kind of the crazy thing, because you can have really shitty practical effects. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Yoda in the second of the original trilogy of Star Wars.
I mean, yeah, it was a puppet.
He looked like a garbage gremlin.
Yeah.
Like a garbage gremlin Kermit who was clearly a puppet, but you're never taken out of it.
Yeah, you're
100%.
Sold.
I think it's just because it feels more human. You know, somebody made it.
Well, that's the magic of Jim Henson too, honestly.
That's
like,
true.
Jim Henson could sell a puppet like no one's business. Mm-hmm. Number five, The Last Airbender.
Why?
No, I'm kidding. Okay. I've not seen it.
We were about to have to pause this whole deal.
I just wanted to know what your reaction would be. I've not seen The Last Airbender. I don't really intend to. Apparently they call him Aang, and that's really frustrating.
Uh-huh. It's Aang Sokka.
Sokka.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and all of the bending is done in one long take. Every single shot. Every single fight, all bending is one long take. With CGI.
That's a choice. Well, you kind of have to do CGI bending, I guess, if you're going to do a live action airbender.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think that M. Night Shyamalan was a bad choice.
Well, I think M. Night Shyamalan didn't know what he was getting into, and I don't think anybody really did when they were going about it. And I've heard now that there's weird things happening, and the original creators have pulled away from
this
remake.
That live-action remake series is not happening anymore.
It's not?
No.
At all?
I think so. I think they pulled it.
Shut it down?
Yeah. That's actually a good example of, like,
There's too many hands in the pot.
Yeah, and then, like, remakes can either be great, they can be just legendary, or...
or really bad. Yeah, so I think they were overwhelmed with it, but I really cannot forgive these fight scenes where they just did, like, 20 seconds of martial arts, and then an element would float across the screen.
Really?
Yeah, it's really bad.
Oof. Well, I think that it's with things like, and I'm not a filmmaker. Well, we should have Gavin Michael Booth on this episode.
We should have.
Let me call him.
Gavin Michael Booth, please comment.
Gavin Michael Booth, I know that you listen to all of our episodes now, and all you love them. Us, apparently.
Yeah, well, we kept him, didn't we keep part of him somewhere?
Part of him, a pinky. In this drawer.
Yes.
but he apparently, the last call got ripped by Variety magazine.
Yeah, I saw that article.
Yeah, that's rude. I was like, I couldn't disagree with it more. Last Call's great. You guys should all go see it. Well, don't go see it. I think it's all virtual. But it's out. I think that, like, not being a filmmaker, I don't understand how it is difficult to stay true to your source material when you're doing a remake. Especially when you're going from, like, TV show to movie, and I get that you're going from animated to live action, but all your source material is there and it's mobile and it's already proved that it works on the screen.
Yeah.
I don't understand, you know, and I know that you can't just, you know, verbatim take the whole series and put it into a movie.
Yeah.
But I think that it could have been a trilogy, and I think that they could have done book one, book two, and book three.
They wanted to, but it did so poorly.
So was Last Airbender? Was that just book one?
The issue was all of book one, all at once. So it was all of book one, all at once. There was never any time to get to know any of the characters. We actually don't learn any of their names until we're three scenes in.
What?
Which was kind of wild. And then they jump to all these places. Most of it is just narrative exposition. And then, like, you get, like, a little bit of, like, what they did as they travel to the North Pole. And then it all sort of happens at the North Pole. So there was a major issue with pacing. But I think I could actually speak to this issue because I am also not a filmmaker. But I've thought about this a lot because I don't understand why the only good Batman movie is the Lego Batman movie.
Okay. That's not entirely true.
All right, the Tim Burton ones are good.
Okay, I don't actually agree with that either.
Oh,
what do you think? The Dark Knight is the best Batman movie that has existed.
I agree and disagree, because the Dark Knight contains the greatest cinematic performance of all time. It is Heath Ledger's Joker, full stop.
I mean, the Dark Knight was basically the Joker of the movie.
Yeah.
And I loved that.
Yeah.
That being said, Christian Bale's Batman was so fucking annoying.
Yes.
Where's Rachel?
I don't understand. That's the thing. I've wondered this. I don't understand why people take Batman and they make him a gargling, growling fool.
He was never that way in the cartoon. Adam West Batman was definitely not that way.
No. And in the Justice League, the animated series, Batman, the animated series, where he was voiced by Kevin Conway, I believe is his name. Or Kevin Conroy.
Conway Twitty.
Something like that. He did a great, very authoritative Batman voice. But Batman never, like, hit or beat anybody up. Batman was imposing because, like, he was smart enough to figure you out, and you knew it. And the other thing too is, like, Batman's story is about being a dad, so, like, Batman is Batman because he didn't have a dad and he needs to take care of his city. He's going to father the city.
Oh, okay.
And where the villains are victims of circumstance and mental illness, the way that you go about solving that issue is different than being a gargling, growling fool.
Mm.
So I've never understood why this hasn't happened, and I think it's because there is a misunderstanding of the depth of the original source material. I think people are way too focused on plot.
Well, and so these days, so like, okay, I think that it is easy to say that there are two eras of superhero movies. There's pre-Avengers and post-Avengers.
Yeah.
Avengers changed the game, you know.
It did, absolutely.
And made it to where you need a cohesive cinematic universe.
Yep.
So I think the big thing that, like, I don't have a problem with Robert Pattinson playing Batman.
Me neither.
I think that's cool. I think that he is actually a good actor when he's not in the Twilight movies, guys. Trust me, he is.
And that wasn't his fault.
And he actually hated those movies. Yeah. But that's why he's so bad in it, actually, is because he did not want to be there at all. But my problem with the Robert Pattinson Batman movie is that it is like the 20th reboot since the Justice League.
Yeah.
And guys, we like, you don't need it. You can't be rebooting your superheroes and still have the cinematic universe.
Yeah.
You can't do it.
Well, they do that in the comics too. They reboot, and they say alternate universes. And,
you know, that's so DC's TV universe does that really well.
Yeah.
You know, they do these parallel worlds. They did Crisis on Infinite Earth.
Yeah.
And they acknowledge and it works really well, but they don't bring that same energy to their movies.
Right.
And so it's all just kind of lost in translation.
I think so, too. But the reason why they keep having to remake the Batman movies is because of the Batman crisis. Nobody understands.
Nobody's getting Batman.
Mm-hmm. Nobody gets, like, who Batman is as a person. And I feel like if they'd spent time with the character and read beyond more than, like, the five most famous comic books, they or even just delved into some of what the rhetoric is online about Batman, we might have a different perspective. Because Batman's original storyline, he's a detective. They're coming from Detective Comics. He's a detective first and foremost. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. He solves crimes like a detective. He's just a weird bat person who goes out at night to, like, really make sure that it gets done.
Yeah. I'm also a weird bat person.
I'm a weird spider person.
Have you tried letting one bite you to see if you get superpowers?
That's what I asked Sam. Well, that's the other reason why I want to use him for witchcraft. Because I need to be able to see, okay, this is my theory. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So if I ingest, if I can sequester the poison within my body, can I use it? Can I then become venomous?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. You know, like Spider-Man?
Yeah, like Spider-Man is venomous.
Spider-Man totally goes around and bites people all the time.
What he does, right, is he has this silk that comes out his ass, and he wraps them up in it.
Yep.
And then he sucks all their juices out.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, and then he will, if threatened, he will, like, go and then bite people.
Spider-Man is one, in my opinion, that they always get right. I think Spider-Man is an easier character to understand.
Yeah, and I think even, so we've had Tobey Maguire, we've had, what's his name?
Tom Holland.
No, the one in between them.
Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield. I don't know why I blanked. I love him. And Tom Holland. And, you know, people have had their opinions about all three of those, and I certainly think that there's better and worse, but the truth is, none of those were a real miss.
None of those were a real miss. My favorite one, though, is the most recent one, which is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh my god, with Miles Morales.
With Miles Morales, mm-hmm. who is voiced by Shameik Moore,
mm-hmm.
who is my favorite Spider-Man at the moment.
I live for Miles Morales Spider-Man, first of all.
Yeah.
But I just love that he was this goofy kid. Well, I loved a couple things. I love that we were taking a break from Peter Parker, you know, just a momentary break from Peter Parker.
Yeah.
To focus on Miles Morales. But I love that he's just, like, this goofy kid who, like, humming Post Malone to himself and singing along with, like, approximately one-third of the lyrics.
Yeah.
And, like, I also loved that they brought in all these different Spider-Men, including Spider-Pig.
Yeah. And the way that they crafted that movie and the look of it, too, even trying to make it look and act like it's a comic book.
Mm,
and
that was so much fun.
Yeah, the overlay of the shading with the dot work. And every single Spider-Man that they brought in, it shows that whoever made the movie, all of the people involved, knew what they were talking about.
It's wild to me that Nick Cage is the Spider-Man noir.
No, it's not wild to me at all.
It's just, like, that is the least Nick Cage that Nick Cage has ever caged.
You think so? I think it's very Nick Cage. I, again, totally feel like it was like, well, hey, Nick Cage, sit in this booth and do whatever you want, and it's the 1940s.
Well, the thing is, if that was the case, then Nick Cage would have been, like, over the top screaming, yelling, killing a producer with his bare hands, you know?
Yeah.
That, I think, that's what I think of when I think of Cage, is, like...
Uncaged.
Uncaged. I am excited because it is confirmed that he will be playing Joe Exotic.
Oh, fuck yes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I will say, if we ever get big enough...
I need to see that.
You need to see it? We all need to see it. I really want us, our show, and you guys can help us get there. I know that you can, because I know that we all want this. I want to have him on the show, and I just want us to be like, Nick Cage, we're going to call this episode Caged Uncaged. Just say things.
Like, we're going to leave the room, and whatever you do for the next hour is up to you.
Is what we want. And then it will be an hour of pure gold. It will be the most valuable piece of media.
We will leave, like, things for him, like, you know, just objects to kind of get him started that he can choose from.
Yeah.
You know, like, a storybook, some Legos.
Just, like, a circle.
A circle. A little bit of acid.
I don't even think he needs it.
I don't think so. And also, it wouldn't take effect in that hour. The hour would be over and then he'd start tripping, so.
That's true.
Anyway, I need to do something.
Oh, no.
And you don't have to bear with me because I don't have my soundboard anymore.
All right, I'm looking forward to this. It's a segment.
It's For the Love of a Lifetime. You obviously could recognize that sexy saxophone.
For the Love of a Lifetime. Well, I'm excited because this makes sense with our premise today.
Yeah, finally. It did the first time, too.
It did. I mean, honestly, and I think I say this every time that we do this segment, it is my favorite segment that you do.
Yeah, so for, like, the really uncool ones of you out there that doesn't know, For the Love of a Lifetime is the segment. It's a game show inside a podcast where I give Maddie a synopsis of a Lifetime movie and then three options of the title, and she has to pick what that is, and she's historically very bad at it.
So bad at it. But Doug is also really good at writing fake titles for Lifetime movies.
I know, it's a talent I didn't know I had, honestly,
until we did that. I mean, I feel like it's a special skill.
I have to get it open. Can this be the song? It sure can. Register to vote. Oh, we're coming up on we're coming up on the voter registration deadline soon. Hey, register to vote.
Register to vote, please.
Oh, that reminds me. We have like a charity promo that we can record for Democracy Now.
Oh, okay, cool. I am registering to vote.
I am too.
Good. And I want to do it in person, even if I have to wait, because I feel like Trump is going to mess everything up.
Mm. It's really easy for me to do in person. It's just like a block down that way.
Oh, nice.
Oh, my God. My drive trash is changing, but will my personal trash be changing?
My inner trash. My inner trash. My core trash, if you will. That's what therapy is for. It's coming to terms with your core trash.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. I had to get it pulled up. Okay. So the first one. A friendship between two young mothers results in murder when one develops an attraction to the other's boyfriend. If that isn't just every Lifetime movie, first of all. But okay. Here are your options.
Why does everything have to escalate to murder?
Murder. Okay. Okay. Here we go. Option number one. If you can't have him. Option number two, I killed my BFF.
Mm-hmm.
And option number three, a man between us.
See, a man between us is a better title. It's like the best one on the list.
It's probably also the title of a porn.
So it can't be that one.
Right.
It would be a good title for a porn.
It would.
That also ends in murder.
Murder!
That's our Halloween segment.
It's just me going, murder!
Okay. What were the first two?
If You Can't Have Him and I Killed My BFF.
It has to be I Killed My BFF because they did the stupid BFF thing and nobody talks like that except for people who think young people talk like that.
Oh my god. Ding, 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 ding. You're right. Yeah. Oh my god. That was so good. Okay. So number two. Okay. I am so proud of this. I didn't write the synopsis, but I'm proud of myself for picking it because it's terrible. Easily the worst movie synopsis I've ever read in my life.
Okay.
A mother and her two teenage daughters move into an ancient house in a suburb of Detroit when it is offered at a very low price.
That's it?
That's all you're getting.
Can I read it? Okay. A mother and her two teenage daughters move into an ancient house in a suburb of Detroit when it is offered at a very low price. There should be two different sentences, but whatever.
It sounds like there is supposed to be a sentence after that, but there wasn't. I checked. I checked a couple of different sources. Okay, but are you ready? Are you ready for these?
I don't know. I feel like that's the title.
Two teenage daughters move into an ancient house in a suburb of Detroit when it is offered at a very low price on 87 Central.
I think that's it. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, option one, Secrets in the Walls.
Mm.
Option two, The Man in the Basement. I don't like that one because it creeps me out. Option number three, The Neighbor You Know.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. The synopsis doesn't help me at all.
No, not at all.
Because I can't say that it's number two or three, because those are external people, and it's... I feel like the synopsis is pointing me towards the house, mm-hmm. specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like anything in the synopsis would make me believe that there's a man in the basement.
Well, it is an ancient house.
It's an ancient man.
It's an ancient man.
You know what it is? It's a bunch of statues of all of the avatars and all of their
Oh, they're at an air temple.
They are at an air temple. I would love to go to an air temple.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to go with the first one.
Secrets in the Walls?
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding. Oh,
my
God.
Did I really get it?
You got a 2 for 2. That was fun. That was a fun one for me to think of titles for because also, like,
there's
what the
nothing
fuck?
For you to do there. Yeah. Okay. I would have titled it Ancient House.
Ancient House. Yeah. Last one.
Okay.
Let's call it This Old House. A woman is convinced that her ex-husband's new girlfriend is trying to harm their daughter when she goes to stay with her dad under the shared custody agreement.
Why are these sentences all so long?
Why did they just all run on to why is the term shared custody agreement in the synopsis? I don't need to know, to know what this movie is about, I don't need to know that there's a shared custody agreement.
I mean, we all would just assume that.
Like, yeah, when she goes to stay with her dad.
You said ex-husband, and you said it's her dad, and then she goes to stay with him. That sounds normal.
Mm-hmm.
A woman is convinced that her ex-husband's new... Okay, let me read it. Let me read it the way that it sounds in my head because it's a run-on sentence. A woman is convinced that her ex-husband's new girlfriend is trying to harm their daughter when she goes to stay with her dad under the shared custody agreement. Oh.
Yeah, it's like everybody who writes these synopses is, like, very much dependent on Adderall.
Yeah.
Okay, option one. A snake in the home.
Snake-like.
Option two. Dangerous Intuition.
Huh. That's mm-hmm. a pretty good title.
Option three. Daddy's New Girlfriend.
I want to pick three just because it's funny to me. Mm-hmm. Two is too good. Two is too good of a title.
Mm-hmm.
Dangerous Intuition.
Mm-hmm. It's a dangerous one.
I could write a whole movie right now in my head called Dangerous Tuition. About a girl who goes to move into an ancient Greek house.
Maybe she gets accepted to this, like, elite college.
Yeah.
But it turns out the college is a cult.
Yes.
And
most of the people in it are ghosts.
Yeah, most of the people in it are ghosts.
Uh-huh.
And also, she dies. The end.
And also she dies.
Hollywood, give me money.
And it's because of this ancient house and the secrets in the walls with the man in the basement.
Oh. Imagine if there was a man in the basement. What if that's the secret in the walls?
I'm really
inside
worried.
The walls, there's a piece of paper that says, there's a man in the basement. That's the secret. In the walls.
Pretty good. Did you know that sometimes people in like old like houses will find weird shit in the walls like that. Like crack and shit.
Crack, you say?
Yep.
What do you think's in these walls?
Should we find out?
Probably crack.
Probably.
Bobby comes probably in here crack. And he's like, what has happened? And it's just like down to the boards.
Well, I can tell you. Do you know what's in the walls of my apartment?
Spiders.
Spiders.
Ugh. Okay, so what the fuck's this title? Do I need to give it to you again?
Okay, my for fun answer is number 3, but my real answer is number 2.
Oh my god, it is Dangerous Intuition.
I got 3 for 3.
You got 3 for 3. Yeah. The first time in branched history. Herstory. I've been watching a lot of Drag Race.
You say that every episode.
Well, there's a lot of Drag Race to watch.
I was actually about to ask. How much Drag Race is there?
There's 12. Okay, if we're just watching Drag Race, like American Drag Race, there is 12 seasons and then 5 All-Star seasons. And then for every episode, there's what they call an untucked episode, which is them, like, after their main challenge, like, all in a room together, and it's all the drama. But I don't like that, so I don't watch those.
Okay. I like that you don't like that.
Yeah, I'm here for the drag.
The sport.
And I'm here to see some friendships made, and I'm here to listen to what Michelle Visage says when she absolutely just rips these queens apart.
So just a little bit of drama.
Just a little bit. A little bit.
Well, that actually is a great segue.
Okay.
Because you like drag queens.
I do like drag queens.
You like drag queens who like other drag queens.
I like drag queens who like other drag queens.
You like some drag queens who tear apart other drag queens.
Well, Michelle Visage is not technically a drag queen. She just dresses like one. But I don't... I like... Yeah, you got it. You got it.
Okay, okay. And my question is, going back to our overarching topic of how do we come to like the movies that we like, how do you get somebody else to like the movies that you like? Because I find it almost impossible.
Well, I abduct them.
Yeah.
Cut them down. Mm-hmm. Cut off a pinky for every time they say they don't like the movie. They can only do it twice. There's only 2.
There's only 2 pinkies. Hey, Doug, did you know that most children have their first experience with food during their childhood? And most people have their first experience with food during their childhood.
Yeah, if you're going to quote the stupid shit I say, quote it right.
Quote it correctly.
Couture.
It's couture. Okay, so they have only 2 pinkies. They have 2 tries to like this movie.
Yeah. Well, so here's what I do, though. Like, I don't necessarily... It's way too vulnerable for me to just share a movie that I like just wantonly.
Yeah, because it's like, it's not even if they dislike it, but it's if they don't pay attention.
If they don't pay attention, you might as well fucking kick me in the balls, I guess.
Right. Like, it's like awesome, amazing. I'm just going to go punch him. You just hate me.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But no, so I try to recommend movies that I like that are their same taste.
Okay. Well, I guess taste is sort of the crutch of the whole deal, right? Because taste, like we said, involves the crux.
The crux?
The LaCroix?
The taste is the crutches of this episode.
Get out.
It's my house.
I'm taking a pinky then. Okay. So that's the crutch of the whole thing, right? Because...
You said it again.
Isn't that not the phrase?
It's crux. The crux.
Wow. Okay. Is the crux of the whole thing. Damn.
Make fun of the stupid shit I say.
I know, and now I'm saying dumb shit, and I didn't even know it.
Anyways, the crutch of the whole thing.
I can't even get over it now. I'm sweating. I was so dumb. Okay, so that's like the crux of the whole thing, right? Because like you said, taste can change and evolve over time. But you also are born with like an innate flavor palette.
Yeah, yeah. If not born with it, you develop it at such an age that it's indistinguishable from being
born with it. If not born with it, it's Maybelline.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, I think... But when it comes to recommending movies, I think you do have to be... like, aware of what they like and don't like. Like, I'm not going to recommend a horror movie to you because that's going to be a bad time for both of us.
Right, because I don't want to watch it. Mm-hmm. And then I don't want to make you feel bad for liking the thing, right?
Right, exactly. And I don't know, like, it is very vulnerable to recommend something that you like.
Yeah.
Because I don't know why, but it is like sharing a piece of yourself and you're hoping that they also like it.
Yeah.
Which is weird when you think of it at its base, because that movie has nothing to do with you.
It doesn't, but I think that what movies we like are telling of vulnerable.
You get it.
I think that movies we like are telling of vulnerable pieces of ourselves, because at the end of the day, great art is supposed to reveal something about the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
And if it reveals something about the human condition to you in a very specific way or a very specific piece of that condition, that's a very vulnerable thing. It's like, this is what life feels like to me, and I'm showing it to you.
Well, and I think that actually you hit on a good point. Something that movies are intended to do is show that part of you.
Yeah.
And it's also meant to help help people identify and relate to it. And so you have great things like these, you know, we've talked about it multiple times now, like queer movies.
Yes.
And queer TV shows that like people can flock to and relate to in ways that they haven't been able to before. And, you know, same thing with like, you have different cultural movies, like, or, you know, movies for people of color,
mm-hmm.
or all these things where it's stuff that is meant for, like, a specific demographic.
Yeah.
But it's meant to help bolster them and help them to find something that they see themselves in.
Yeah, to find something, I think to find something grounding, right? Yeah. Because you have to find something grounding within your own experience to show you your way.
Yeah.
Your way of being or your footing, so you can take your next step forward. I think that phrasing is really good because it shows you what the world feels like. We're seeing it through the lens of, this is not the reality of the world, but mm-hmm. this is what it feels like mm-hmm. when it comes through my perspective.
Yeah. So I'm watching Lovecraft Country right now.
Yes. And so it's very good.
I recommend it. And even though it's kind of like billed as horror, it's not. It's like if a pulp sci-fi novel from the 60s was a television show, when it was really well executed because it's Jordan Peele.
Love it.
But it also, it like, very much hits on racial tension, racial issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it from the perspective of Black people in the 60s.
Yeah.
Or maybe 50s. I'm not sure when this show takes place.
50s, 60s.
Yeah, somewhere about in there. Time. When it was not great for Black people.
When?
All the time, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now, too.
I mean, that's why it's, like, so poignant for him to come out now.
Yeah, it is. But what it does for me, I obviously cannot relate on a fundamental level for what it's like to be a Black man in America.
Right.
But for this movie, for this show, like, not only is it entertaining, not only is it visually appealing and well thought out, great actors and actresses, but it is showing and spotlighting an area in the culture, in the country that I live in, that I would not personally be able to understand if it weren't for movies and TV shows like this.
I think that's an amazing thing that movies mm-hmm. can do. Movies can sort of transcend those boundaries for us and draw us in a way that other things can't
mm-hmm.
and make these different perspectives, these different realities, real.
And in a something way. That you can connect with.
Right.
And, like, I think what's wild is, like, yeah, you still have these things, like, The Help is another great example of a movie that highlights an experience that I personally can't ever know.
Right.
But it was able to reveal things in me in such a way that it connected me to that experience.
Right.
So it's also teaching me about myself while teaching me about other people.
Yeah. And yeah. Teaching you about yourself while teaching you about other people.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah. I think that's, movie makers have a really big responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you can see that certain movie makers, they don't care about that. I think you can always tell. And, like, that's what I was thinking earlier about the Batman movies.
Yeah.
You can always tell when someone is making a movie to make money. And granted, that's, every movie is out there to make money. Like, right. No one is trying not to make money.
It is a business, yeah.
But you can tell where their priorities are. And for Batman movies, like, that's why they keep rebooting it. That's why they keep having this perspective issue, because they're not trying to have art first.
Yeah.
They're not trying to have this content where they speak to your soul and connect to you.
Yeah.
They're trying to be Marvel, and they're trying to beat Marvel.
Right.
And that's their priority. And so you see, like, Michael Bay is another director that is very money first. Like, he knows that he can just throw millions of dollars into explosives.
Yeah.
And make a movie that way.
Yeah.
And then you've got Jordan Peele, who gives you this story that is teaching you about society and also keeping you connected. And you have, you just have, like, you see people who do it with that responsibility in mind, that they are taking you to a vulnerable place.
Yeah.
And they are mindful of that.
Yes. They're taking you to a vulnerable place, and they'll take you to a place. And I think Jordan Peele does this so well in his, I would honestly consider his work in a genre of its own.
Yeah, it's Jordan Peele. Yeah.
It's Jordan Peele-esque, where he can make you uncomfortable, and maybe it's thriller-ish, scary-ish, but not really, and not for the reason that you would think. It's like Scream, like you were saying, like the mm-hmm. jump scares, the plot devices, that's not what's scary, or even, like, intriguing or interesting about it. It's the perspective of, this is what this is like, this is what the reality is, and this is the danger of that.
And I will say, like, okay, Us, though, was a terrifying film. Yeah. It was creepy.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't terrifying in the way, like, there are some, like, heavy hitter scary movies out there, like Hereditary, what is it? The other movie they did, Midsommar,
mm-hmm.
and that are, like, anxious causing. Then there's, like, the Conjuring movies, which are very scary.
Mm-hmm.
Us was just creepy.
It was really creepy. Still think about it.
Yeah, but its main point wasn't just to creep you out. Like, it was definitely a priority, but the main point was to tell you this twisted tale and build this, like, strange world.
Yeah.
Which I loved.
Yeah, and then we get to the end, and it sort of felt like, I mean, at least to me, the way that I interpreted it is, we get to the end, and they show the shirt, and they're all, like, holding hands across, mm-hmm. and it's like, it's literally, this is us.
It is. That's exactly what it is. It was their, like, coming out moment,
yeah.
You know? It was, we've been here, we've been in this underworld this whole time, living as your shadow, and we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
And, because, too, like, what was great is, you know, obviously we're both too young to remember the Hands Around the World movement.
Yeah.
But that was meant to be this huge physical statement.
Yeah.
And that was a statement of unity, where this was supposed to be this huge physical statement of acknowledgement in existence.
Exactly. And that's the moment that I think scared me the most. Because, you know, you're saying, like, this is us.
Mm-hmm.
But when you say this is us, the other hour and a half previous to that is also us.
Well, yeah, it's very much like, this is us, and, you know, it doesn't change that we spent an hour and a half just killing you.
Right.
And killing our counterparts.
Right. And so that's something that's, it's so crazy. And I can't remember, did Jordan Peele win an Oscar for
I know they
Get
were
Out?
Yes. Yeah, he definitely, well, at least Get Out won. I'm not sure who won it.
Okay.
But, and I know that Us was nominated for a few different things.
For a few different
Also, things. Like, I already loved her, but it really solidified my love of Lupita Nyong'o.
Oh my gosh.
She's so good.
Yes. Is she still dating, Janelle Monáe?
What?
You didn't know about this?
No.
I know that I think that there were either rumors that they were dating or they were actually dating.
I didn't even know Lupita Nyong'o was queer.
Janelle Monáe and
they took their relationship public. Okay,
and that was in 2019. So I'm like, I'm gonna assume.
Oh my god,
they're still together because
what a power couple! I love that
because Lupita Nyong'o kicks ass, right?
Mm-hmm.
Janelle Monáe kicks ass, mm-hmm. and I like them together.
Janelle Monáe is actually in a new horror thriller movie called Antebellum. And it's a psychological thriller.
I did hear about this. But the reason that I bring up the whole Oscar thing is because as we were talking about how to get somebody to like something that you like and how to even use the craft of movie making to understand a perspective that is different than somebody else's, how do we determine value? And how do we determine value to what degree? Like, basically, do the Oscars matter?
So, they do and they don't, in my mind. Like, there are times where the recognition is so well-deserved, like Us and Get Out.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's, you know, well-deserved, and I think there are other movies like that, too, but then I think that there are Academy movies.
Right.
And
so much journalism has been written about this over the last couple of years.
Yeah. And there's a formula. There's this video. It's a few years old. This YouTube video that is like Academy Award nominee trailer. And it's just like a generic Academy Award winning movie.
Yeah.
And it literally, there's a formula, and there's Oscar bait. Like, those movies are Oscar bait. That's what they're there for. That's what they're out to do.
Yeah.
And I don't like feeling manipulated for you to win an Oscar.
Right. And they pull on specific emotions and specific life experiences, because the powers that be, I think, at the Oscars are going to have certain life experiences of their own that's going to draw them to that movie.
Well, and so this is an unpopular opinion.
Mm.
But that is why I don't like Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
Because when I watched it, and I was so excited for it.
Yeah, it felt like Oscar bait.
It was. That's all it felt like. Even down to when that one woman, one of the three women, had like her breakdown about having to go a half mile out of her way to pee every day at work. And that whole monologue with like the crying and emotion and you don't know. That's an Oscar monologue. Like, it took me completely out of it, because I was like, this is Oscar bait that I'm watching right now.
You think so?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, I actually haven't seen Hidden Figures. I'm going to watch it, and I'll get back to you on this.
Yeah, let me know, because, I mean, I love Janelle Monáe. I love Octavia Spencer.
Yeah.
I don't remember the third lady, but I liked her as an actress. The guy who plays Buzz Aldrin, I also like, but the whole movie from start to finish was the exact formula that Academy Award winners have.
Yeah, but it was also important because they were literally Hidden Figures.
So don't get me wrong. Like, I love that.
Yeah,
and
that aspect of it was
important. I love that empowerment, and I live for that. But I wish that they had taken that and just been true to themselves and been true to the movie that they want to make and not have the Oscars in mind at all. Because I do feel like when I was watching it, I felt like some moments were disingenuous because they know that they need to put those moments in there because they need an Oscar.
Hmm. You know what we need to see more of on TV?
Dick.
Putting squishy bits in other people's mouths.
Oh, I was right.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Love the squishy bits.
I love the squishy bits.
Okay, well that's interesting, because I think you're right. Like, they do and they don't. Like, we can and cannot assign value to any particular thing, and it always has to come down to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also, like, tried and true methods of communication, of narrative, depending on whatever culture you are in, just structurally, how mm-hmm. you tell your story, that work and don't work as well. So I think when we push the envelope, mm-hmm. I think that propels us forward and gives us more ideas about how to stretch it structure-wise so that more new things can fit.
Yeah, and that's, I know we've talked about him a lot, but that's what I like about Jordan Peele, is he's very future-forward, you know?
Yeah, I think because like I said, he has his own genre. It's its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I definitely want to see more of that. I want to see a good Batman movie.
And a just good Batman franchise.
A good Batman franchise. I want to see more of Miles Morales as Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see more animated movies in general, forever, always.
I want to see more penis on TV.
More penis on TV?
Yeah, if you're showing boobs, show penis. You fucking cowards.
You fucking cowards. I want a shaft on the screen now.
Now.
Now. I think that's actually a great place to end it.
Yeah, I think so.
We're going to put a shaft on the screen?
Put a shaft on the screen, like Chris Evans.
All right, guys, we are going to close out here. Love you very much.
We love you so much.
Please email us at Branch Podcast, or tweet at us, even better, at Branch Podcast, your top 5 favorite movies,
mm-hmm.
And why Laura Dern is your favorite queer icon.
Oh my God, such a queer icon. Yeah, and let us know what you want to hear about. We love you. We love you so much.
Bye.
That's it. Bye.
That was fun.
That was fun.